Today's show is brought to you by Cody Akins at AkinsPCRepair.com.
I'm independent.
Hey, welcome to the show, all 11 of it. It is me, Jonathan, and me, James. Hey, me, James.
Hello, happy Veterans Day.
Yeah, happy Veterans Day to you, too.
You can say happy Veterans Day because that's for the alive ones. It's a solemn Memorial Day.
Memorial Day, but you cannot and should not celebrate with anything but these low, low savings on our Patreon show. It's only $5 a month for right now, and it always has been. Yeah, it is weird that it's become okay to do Memorial Day sales and everything, where like you would never do that for Martin Luther King. It's kind of like, oh, it's a January celebration, right? But they don't say anything about Martin Luther King in there. We might not be able to go to the sale with you, but by God, we're going to get there.
I have a dream of low, low savings.
I might not make it to the savings. And yet we have Memorial Day sales, and people get mad about the fact that we have Memorial Day sales and barbecue and have fun outside and stuff. That's not what Memorial Day is about. It's supposed to be about standing around and crying, because that's what our the dead would want, us to be so grief-stricken all the time that they can't think straight on Earth anymore, because we're missing
them. Not all the time, just that one day.
Oh, just that one day. So you save it all for that one day. Okay.
Yeah. And then you completely lose your shit that day.
Like, just cover the mirror so you can't see your reflection because you've been crying so much, that kind of thing. Hey, I think about that a lot, though. Like, when I die, I know it's the classy thing to say, like, oh, I want my funeral to be fun. I don't. I want it to be so, so depressing. I want at least one person to try to throw themselves into the grave with me. Just one. I'm not picking who, you, but I'm not picking who. I'm just saying,
The saddest songs imaginable playing the whole
time. Oh, yes. Yeah. Nothing but Smith's music. And they'll be like, but he hated the Smiths. And he was like, yeah, well, he hated the Smiths, but he wanted you people to have to hear it.
There's a light, John, that never goes out.
Apparently it did, though, on that day that I died. No, I want rending of garments. Yeah, somebody screaming, take me. Why him? I want people to not be able to finish the eulogy. I want, like, there to be a prepared speech, getting up there, start talking, and they go, I just can't! And then done.
Yeah. Not like choked up for a minute.
Mm-mm.
Like, okay, let me get back to that.
Heaving. Like, I want people vomiting with grief. Is that a thing? I want... Not just like
it is now.
Like a little dribble vomit. I'm saying like expectoration, projectile, like SNL in the 90s when they used to do scenes where somebody would vomit where there was like a tube coming out of their sleeve, just spraying it like that level. You know, I don't think you've lived a good life if you don't have that kind of funeral. I've been to plenty of funerals and I walk away going, I guess I didn't care that much about that person. I feel nothing.
They weren't as great as that priest said they were.
Yeah. If this ends up being, like, if I end up dying after this episode, that would just be something. Though nobody would hear, because if I die right after the episode, then you would have to publish it somehow. Anyway, welcome to the show.
I gotta take it out to Boston anyway, John. I'm
that's true. James is coming out here in less than a week.
Yep.
Less than a week. You'll be out here. And it's going to be fun. I'm going to pick you up at the airport and then... bring you home, and you're going to clean my house. That's the
plan. If I don't, into the mash.
Into the mash. Yeah, then we're going to New York City on Thursday and Friday. I got tickets to go see The Book of Mormon, which I'm very excited about. It's, you know what's funny?
The musical, not the actual book.
No, that's what we're going. Yeah, no. Church of Latter-day Saints.
Oh, okay.
James, I'm converting you. It's been long enough. All right. I've been hinting around this for a while. I mean, it's been hints because I've been wearing the sacred undergarments and not told you, but yeah, total full on Mormon. Now there is actually, I used to pass it every day. There's this giant LDS church, which you wouldn't think. Boston, like Massachusetts, LDS, whatever. But there's a big LDS church on Route 2. And you can tell what it is. It's got a giant gold statue atop it. You know.
Oh, is it the angel blowing the horn?
Yep. Yeah, yep. That's it. Yeah.
They're big on those.
You know, like Jesus would have wanted.
Yeah.
Jesus loved adorning things in gold. Just, that was him. That was him. The son of a carpenter. You know, it's, yeah, whatever. But yeah, we're going to go to.
He didn't want, no.
We're going to go to New York City on Thursday and Friday. I don't know what we're going to do the rest of the time, but we're Thursday and Friday set.
Hey, take it from there.
Take it from there. We're probably going to drink. That's probably most of it. That's what I, it's funny because I was telling Katie about like, hey, I think it was like a few days ago. I was like, you know, I think when James comes here, I think, you know, I think I'll take him to New York City. And she's like, oh yeah, that'd be cool. And I was like, you know what I just realized? She's like, what? I was like, James is a grown ass adult man. She's like, yes. And I was like, I mean, I pretty much like most of the things that I can't do that I want to do in New York City, I can't do because I have children with me. Like, we can't, because we can't leave the kids here. There's nobody to watch them.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like, basically, I'm going to take you out on the town like I would wish I could take my wife. Yeah.
Or you pull the old switcheroo on me and just have me babysit and you're gone for a couple of days.
Maybe you'll come down with something. Anyway, it's going to be lots of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. So we're going to do a fact show today. Here are my facts. My facts are, one, old people are terrible drivers. That's what you're told. Actually, not true. Old people, especially in a specific age range, are the best drivers on the road. Second fact is, one of the classic episodes of The Simpsons was written by Conan O'Brien. He was a writer for The Simpsons, but he specifically like drafted the episode, as it's called. Like, he came up with the idea, and then all the writers kind of filled in the details on it. One of those episodes is considered one of the greatest episodes of the show and possibly any show in TV history. And it was absolutely hated by the writers and cast when they put it together. And my final fact is, why does turning it off and on again work? And it was inspired by a story about an astronaut on the moon, the first moon landing, Michael Collins, doing that and saving the mission.
Okay.
Yeah. What are your facts about, James?
I got a fact about a jail for polar bears.
You mean a zoo?
No. Okay. No.
Just sounds like a zoo to me. I don't know.
I have a fact about how dangerous bubbles can be.
Bubbles?
Mm-hmm.
Like living in a bubble where like you don't let things in that...
If that makes you feel better.
Like Mar-a-Lago. Sure. Okay. All right. Political humor.
And I got a thing about coffee.
Thing about coffee. All right. Can I just say this? I would never go on a political spiel whatsoever. You know me. This is a safe spot for that. But I just want to say, I've noticed over the last few days, since Tuesday, with the election not being the red wave that was expected, and a lot of people, including on Fox News and talk radio, laying that at the feet of one former president.
Thanks, Reagan.
I just want to say, guys, the water's so nice here. Like, I'm just telling you, you don't have to buy into progressivism, higher taxes on the rate. You can still have all your beliefs. That's fine. But one thing that could unite this country would be going full in making fun of that guy. It is so fun here. The water is so nice. It's like you guys are on Cape Cod, where it's only nice like a couple months of the year. Like it's usually bad, but you're convincing yourself, no, this is fine. This is fine. Yeah, there's sharks out there, but this is fine. I'm telling you, the water here.
Do you know how expensive it is to live here? It's got to be nice.
This is Fort Lauderdale. This is Miami Beach. This is Aruba, Jamaica. Ooh, I want to take you. just come down here. Just hang out with us for a little bit because it's really fun. Like you have no idea. And I know part of you wants to come here. I know part of you is like sitting on the beach in Cape Cod, just checking out Airbnbs in South Beach, you know, just checking them out, just seeing maybe if we have enough money, maybe things go right. You know, just saying, it's really fun. As I really do think a lot of the animus towards the former guy was because he's just so easy to make fun of. You know, it was just he is just a perfect if he was on a TV show, he'd be like Michael Scott. He would be that guy. He's just oblivious and narcissistic. And that makes it so easy.
The amazing one that it was a TV interview and there was no joking with you.
Oh, you're talking about this. Yes. Yeah.
Like, you know, good or bad, how much of this, depending on how the election goes, how much of it is on you? And he's like, well, I mean, if it goes well, they should give me all the credit. And if it goes bad, I shouldn't get any of the blame.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. 100% serious. Not like,
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just, please, I'm just telling you, like, you can have all your beliefs. Nothing will change other than you can join us in a moment of unity in just making fun of him. You can even vote for him again if you want. Just realize that he's a clown. Please. All right. Before we get to facts, just want to throw a couple studies at you, see if you agree or disagree with this kind of stuff. First study that is this. A new study suggests that you can buy happiness for $10,000. You know, Paul McCartney told me that he could drive my car. You know, I don't know what he had to say about happiness or money buying it, but he told me that he would drive my car. $10,000 buys happiness. Researchers,
I mean, said money couldn't buy him love.
Yeah.
Didn't say anything about happiness.
I think that was implied. Researchers gave 200 random people a one-time payment of $10,000 and required them to spend it within 3 months. So like a Brewster's Millions, only a Brewster's
$10,000.
They recorded how the people felt on a monthly basis and found that they reported being happier and more satisfied with their lives than another group that didn't get the money. They even reported being happier than they were when the experiment first started. So there you go. So just $10,000 over 3 months, so roughly $3,333 and something cents a month extra would make you happy.
How far after that 3 months did they? Does it say how long?
Does it say how long it lasted?
Because depending on how you spend it, like it can be something, you know, tangible that you're like, oh, I have that because some jerk off decided to see if giving me $10,000 would make me happy.
So I talked about this.
Most people, I think they'd be like, hey, here's $10,000. Only catch is you got to spend it in 3 months. People would be like, cool.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, honestly, like it also depends on where you live. Like $10,000 in Kansas City or St. Louis. Oh, cool. I can afford, I can use this for the mortgage for the rest of the year.
Regardless of where you live, it's $10,000 more than you had.
True, but I'm just saying $10,000 goes a lot further there than it would in on the East Coast or California. I did a thing last week when I was filling in on WTMJ. So if anybody listening to this heard that, I apologize for repeating myself, but I talked about happiness.
Everything but Friday. Friday is lost in the Bermuda Triangle of radio.
I don't know what I did, but for some reason it disappeared. So I talked about happiness, and there was a study that said that you cannot and refuse to be happy between your 40s and 60s. Between the age of 40 and 60, you are not happy. You're almost guaranteed to have a midlife crisis, and you just cannot find a good balance in your life. And the thing I asked, and I'm going to ask it right now with this, is that they always have these studies on happiness. They never once define what happiness is. Right? They never once say, what is happiness? And if you
also
Google the definition of happiness, it literally is the state of being happy. That I don't know what happiness is. Define it first, and then we can talk about whether the study is accurate or not.
Also, what if I was miserable all through my 20s and 30s?
Then
do I get a break?
Yeah.
Like, did I just get it out of my system already?
I personally feel happier now than I ever have in my life. I mean, I think the difference is I know myself better now. Like, I know how I'm going to react to situations better. Whereas I used to live in dread of things like what's happening with me right now, being laid off. I used to fear that so much. But having gone through it already, I'm like, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll be fine. I'll be fine. And that's where I'm at right now. I'm like, yeah, you know, things have a way of working out.
What if the robots at Boston Dynamics become sentient?
It's only a matter of time. So, yeah, but again, they never define what happiness is. So I don't know. I don't know what this is. Like, is it just a state of unending bliss? That's euphoria. That's not happiness. Does it just mean that you feel a little bit better than you did before? I don't know. So what is happiness? Happiness is just living in the moment and not thinking ahead too far or backwards too far. It's living right now and not questioning it. It's hard to do, but I'm pretty sure that's what it is. And yeah, if you gave me $10,000 extra, I might be a little bit happier. But I think you have to know that within yourself. I don't think $10,000 necessarily makes you happier on sight. Because there's some people out there who are listening to this who are like, I need a lot more than $10,000 to make me happy.
But in the short term, the hookers and blow that you can get for $10,000.
Pretty great. Pretty great.
I mean, this isn't standard Saturday night hookers and blow.
Okay, I have to ask. I'm sure that there's a market, right? Does inflation affect prostitution? Okay, I'm trying to think of like some references for this, right? I have no idea what a prostitute would cost now, obviously. What is the line from Blazing Saddles? Mr. Lamar, you use your mouth better than a...
$20 whore.
So $20 whore. That, and I'm assuming that joke was written more contemporaneously, so for the 1970s than it was for the 1870s, whenever that takes place, Blazing Saddles. So $20 probably back then in the 70s maybe was a good price for a hooker, or at least for that specific act. Do you think that inflation affects that, though? Where they're like, hey, I got to raise my prices. And then if they have like regular customers, which is, I think, 90% of any good industry is repeat customers. So if they have repeat customers and they're like, yeah, I know I was only charging you $100 for, you know,
the supply chain. But, I mean,
like, yeah. And what's the basis for that? Because everything else is more expensive, so now I need to charge you more. And honestly, why does it kind of make me envy hookers? Because they can kind of just change their prices if they want. Like, that's just on them or their pimp. You know?
Ideally them.
Ideally them. Like, you can say what you will about what an awful lifestyle it must be. At least their wages aren't stagnant.
I mean, it's supply and demand. You're like, hey, you don't want them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nobody's forcing you to.
Look, I'll do that, but I'm not putting the dishwashing gloves on. That's just how it goes. That's just how it goes. Sorry. Weird conversation.
The whole point.
All right. Next little study is this. 1 in 3 people fake smile to pretend to like a relative's cooking. 1 in 3 people admit to forcing a smile to pretend to enjoy a relative's cooking, and 2 in 5 say they've forced a smile to pretend to like a gift. See, I have a problem with this. It's not that I'm honest on principle. I just have no filter. So if I don't like something, I'm just going to say it.
You're just bad at lying.
I was explaining this to one of my kids, Finn, actually. Was asking me about it because I told him that I tell stories about him on air and stuff. And he was like, you tell stories about me? Like we walked home from school. I was like, well, no, I'd never talk about that. I was like, maybe I might exaggerate it. And he was like, oh, so you lie. And I was like, no, it's not lying. It's exaggerating to make things more interesting. That's what I do. I'm a terrible liar.
It's hyperbole. Okay.
Yes, I'm a terrible liar, but I am great at exaggerating. I'm amazing at it. The closest I'll get to lying is a pitch change in my voice. Where so like if hey, what, you know, we've had a lot of friends that are musicians and stuff. What'd you think of our demo? Yeah, yeah, you know, it was interesting. Yeah.
You guys are all really clearly good musicians.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't seem like you're playing the same song, but
no, I mean, was that on purpose? Was everything you did there on purpose?
Is this like a Sonic Rubik's Cube? Like, yeah, can I switch tracks around and like, no, if you isolate all these tracks and switch them around and you find the right combination, it's awesome.
You know what's the best way to say that you don't like something? It's not for me. It's not for me. Because now you're just making, I'm an asshole. I suck. I'm the worst.
I have this really pedestrian, plebeian taste in music.
Oof. Yeah. So I don't appreciate it.
I get what you're doing. Yeah. I get what you're doing. I do.
Like, you know what an absolute Philistine I am. I mean, I am just a rock thrower. I just am. Okay. all right. So anyway, people smile to get their ways out of to fake their way through a relative's cooking.
You don't want to hurt no feelings.
Nearly all of the Gen Z members in the survey say they expect to be asked about their relationship prospects, future aspirations, career plans this holiday season. And more than half of all adults expect at least one difficult question about their future or personal life. And about half of adults say they struggle to figure out what to talk about with their relatives. I don't, because I just don't talk to them.
Problem solved.
Problem solved. Pretty easy. I mean, I've had with going on with us, the whole being laid off thing, I have people, again, checking in on me and all the time. And it's wrong to tell people that I'm happy, apparently. It's wrong to tell people, like, I'm fine. Like, I believe in myself and I'll get another job and it'll probably pay better than the one I had. But apparently that's wrong, because they're like, oh yeah, no, sure, yeah, that's true.
Here's what you tell them from now on, John. Tell them you're doing all right, you're getting good grades, your future's so bright, you gotta wear shades.
I thought in that song he was saying my teacher's so bright, and I didn't get it.
Well, I mean, it helps if you have a smart teacher.
Yeah, I guess so. All right, time to get to facts. My first fact is this. We always like to start these off with a non-fact. My first fact that is not true is old people are terrible drivers. Actually, according to statistics, drivers aged 60 to 69, nice, have the lowest rates of car crashes of any age group. That's pretty much it for the statistics on that, is they have the lowest amount of crashes. Now, it goes up statistically after that. So I guess saying old people are bad drivers is not true, so long as you have a very...
Categorically true.
Yeah. The elderly maybe are bad, but older people, not necessarily bad. 60, 69, you're good. It just kind of falls off a cliff after that. Now, here's the question. Why would those people between ages of 60 and 69 have statistically the lowest amount of crashes?
They're not going anywhere?
Yeah, they probably have a fairly regular commute. Probably,
or they recently retired and they're like, I'm not driving. That.
Yeah, true. They maybe they drive less, or maybe they drive slower, or maybe they just the experience of driving for 40 years, 42 years or so, just makes you a better driver. And just I honestly do think I'm a better driver than a lot of people, and that's because I'm a narcissist and an egomaniac, but also it's because I was a pizza driver for years. I can kind of sense things happening before they happen when it comes to driving, which is why I got into an accident in Cleveland a year and a half ago, but I knew it was going to happen right before it happened.
Hey, man, Cuyahoga County's a different beast.
It really is. Yeah, James, what do you think? You think it's just they're more experienced? Why do you think older people would be 60 to 69 be a good age to drive?
Yeah, there's experience. It's probably before you hit any major like cognitive decline or, you know, like loss of reaction time. And
well, going back to the study about happiness between the ages of 40 and 60, a lot of people said that they were less happy between those ages because they've started to feel their cognitive abilities decline. But actually, that's a misnomer, not true. Between those ages, that's usually when you're at your smartest. Between 40 and 60 is when your cognitive abilities are at a peak. I believe that. I'm way smarter now than I was in my 20s. Like, maybe wise is the right word, but maybe wisdom isn't the accrual of experience. Maybe it's just clarity that comes from knowing that I did the wrong thing once. I'm not going to do that again, which is also, you know, accruing experience, but whatever. James, what's your first fact?
My first fact that isn't a fact is coffee beans. They're not beans.
They're not beans.
They're not beans.
Are they legumes?
No, they're not legumes. They are actually the pips of a stone fruit.
Really?
Yep. The plant is called coffea and grows kind of equatorially best. There's a band around the equator. It goes north and south a bit, but in that kind of warmer climate. They're often called coffee cherries. They're reddish purple, kind of look like really plump grapes.
Mm-hmm.
Grow on a tree or a bush. You eat or you get the fruit off. There is a critter called a civet, which will eat the whole thing, and it will pass through its digestive system. And there are people who will take those coffee seeds out of the civet poop, and it is very, very high-end coffee for some people who like poop.
So there used to be a commercial for a company called Caldi's Coffee, and I thought this was apocryphal, and probably is, but apparently the story goes that Caldi discovered coffee after he noticed that after eating
Ethiopian goat herd.
Yeah, Ethiopian goat herd. After they ate berries from a certain tree, his goats became really energetic and didn't want to sleep at night. And I love the human experience of, hey, what's fucking them goats up? Let's try that shit. You know what? I'm bored. Let's see what it's like. Let's see what it's like.
Well, when there wasn't anything to do.
Yeah. Yeah. This is before TV, kids.
You'd find a thing and you'd be like, huh. I wonder if I could eat that. And you try and eat it, and you're like, that's not very good. And then the next step is, well, let's soak it in water for a while. And you soak it in water for a while, and you're like, that's still not very good. Let's boil it in water for a while. Still not great. Let's heat it up over a fire without water.
There we go.
See what happens.
There we go. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's a multi-step process, because that's heating it up over a fire without water. Crushing it. Put it in boiling water again.
Yeah. It is. That's what we it's evolution, baby. I mean, you know, there wasn't like just one guy doing this. It was a bunch of people just like, hey, let's just grind this stuff up, whatever. I mean, that's how we discovered beer. We left bushels of wheat out and people started drinking the water underneath. It was like, why are you drinking that water? Dude, I saw a fucking I saw a possum do it and that possum got fucked up. I want to see
that
what happens.
Possum was like it was having a time.
That possum's my best friend. It came into my cave, started telling me how much it loves me and stuff. It was great.
We really bonded.
We did.
It was special.
So yeah, it's weird the way we figure things out as human beings. Like we like to think like human beings like to think, oh, we're reserved or whatever. We're the biggest freaks on the planet, man. Because no other animal would see another animal doing something and go, I'll try that. I'm going to give that a shot.
There's this big rock I found. Do you remember that big rock you found?
Yeah.
What are you doing later? Let's stack them on top of each other. Why? What else are we going to do?
What else? I'm bored, dude. Maybe that's it. Maybe boredom is singular to the human experience, and that's what leads us to our innovations. You know? It's like, I look at my dog. My dog doesn't look bored. He looks tired. He looks grumpy. But he doesn't look, he never looks bored. And he doesn't do anything all day. Yeah. Like, sometimes he needs to be played with, I guess, so maybe there's some boredom there. But once you play with him, then he's done. Now he's happy again. Yeah. All right. Good fact. Here's my second fact. The most well-received episode of The Simpsons, typically those come down to three episodes, actually. It's either the Frank Grimes episode, Last Exit to Springfield, which is where Homer fights to get the dental plan back for Lisa, or Marge versus the Monorail. Marge versus the Monorail was a takeoff of the Music Man. Guy comes to town, sells a bunch of stuff. In this case, he sells them a giant monorail, and the town goes nuts over it. The I think
expertly sung by Phil Hartman.
One of Phil Hartman's best roles, honestly. God, I miss that man. I know it's been over 25 years since his passing, but God, he was great. And if you've never seen the episode, I'm not going to explain it to you, but it's considered a great episode. I love the episode, but I love every single episode of The Simpsons up until about year 9. Then I started to go like, I don't know about this. It was not a well-received episode of the show. According to Yeardley Smith, who does the voice of Lisa Simpson, she said, it was truly one of our worst. We, the entire cast, all agree. A lot of the writers agree. And a lot of fans of the show at the time didn't like it. I guess they were on, I don't know, BBB message sites or whatever, like the internet was back in 1993. They complained about it because of the cartoonish premise. Like if you watch The Simpsons, there is kind of a progression towards like Looney Tunes esque type of stuff, where the first season, especially, that's basically just Roseanne. That's just basically like that show is just real. It's just drawn. And then progressively they got sillier and sillier and used more cartoonish premises. I always find it fascinating when something is rejected initially and then beloved eventually. Conan O'Brien, he wrote the episode. He said it's one of his favorite things that he's ever written, bar none, not just for The Simpsons or Harvard Lampoon or for his own show or SNL, any other thing he's done. It's his favorite thing that he's ever written. And it's also interesting to me. I wonder how much of Conan O'Brien writing it has to do with it considered to be a classic episode.
I think I appreciated that episode before I realized who Conan O'Brien was.
So it came out in 1993. We were like 11 years old or so. I loved the episode.
Yeah.
Again, I loved every episode, but I'm going back and looking through episodes from that year, the fourth season of The Simpsons, and I don't know that it's better than a lot of other episodes. I don't think it's better than Krusty Gets Canceled. I don't even think it's as good as that episode.
I call the big one Bitey.
That's actually, that was Conan's favorite line, too. So his favorite thing he's ever written was, I call the big one Bitey. But Camp Krusty is great. Homer's Heart Attack is one of my favorite episodes of all time. Let's see. Or Homer's Triple Bypass is what it's called. Lisa's first word. Mr. Plow? I mean, come on. That's one of the best episodes of any show ever. The Itchy and Scratchy movie. Lisa the Beauty Queen. Homer the Heretic. A Streetcar Named Marge. I mean, again, it's a great episode, but to me, when I go back and look at it, I don't think it stands above any of those other episodes. And I really do wonder if they're like, look, all the episodes are great. We just need something. This has that little wabi-sabi to it. This has that little it factor because it was written by Conan O'Brien that now we're like, ooh, this one's extra special. I mean, it would be like finding out, I don't know, David Letterman wrote an episode of MASH or something, and you go back, you're like, ooh, that episode really does stand out, or I don't know.
I should have known when it had a top 10 list in the middle of it.
Right.
Seems
there.
Seems obvious in hindsight, but
yeah. I'll just ask this. What made you who you are personality wise? Like, what formed you as far as pop culture stuff is concerned? Because for me, definitely The Simpsons. I used to go over to my aunt's house every weekend and she would tape The Simpsons for me because my dad wouldn't let me watch it. And I would watch the taped episode of The Simpsons from the week before and then every other episode. I watched it over and over again. And then later on, she told me I need to start staying up late and watch Conan O'Brien. Because she was like, I think you'll really think he's funny. Like, you'll really get a sense of humor. And that Conan O'Brien in general just kind of made me who I am, because I started watching him and I went, oh, I need to stop trying to make people laugh by making fun of other people and just make fun of myself. Like, that's what I learned more than anything. It was like, I'm not funny when I make fun of other people. And that's just mean. And I don't like doing it. But it's funny when I make fun of myself. That's good. So I guess Conan O'Brien, I guess you could say, formed me. If he had written for MST3K, I would be building a shrine to him right now. I would go steal the angel off that Mormon church and be erecting a shrine to Conan in my backyard. The fact that I
give it kind of a fluffy hair and freckles.
The fact that I live near Brookline where he grew up is almost enough. In fact, we had the Jonathan and Ayla Facebook page, his sister who still lives here was a fan of our show, and that was like the greatest thing that ever happened to me. And the only person who cared was Katie.
I heard a podcast yesterday and they were talking about the origins of Dunkies.
Mm-hmm.
And now the first one was in Quincy.
Yep. Been to it. It's awful. They're mean. They're super mean. I took my mom there when she came out here three years ago. She came out here and she's like, let's go to the first Dunkin' Donuts. And I was like, okay. And we went there and she's like goes in and she's all like, hi, this is the first Dunkin'. And they're like, what do you want? You want to order something or what? What do you want? Like, they stop short of calling
you're
her
holding
a bitch.
Up the line, jag off.
There was nobody there.
You're holding up the line.
I was so angry. Like, they were so mean to my mom. Like, you gonna order something or what? What do you want? And she's like, oh, I'm not used to hostility. People usually see me and are nice.
No.
Nah. Anyway, so what is it for you, James? Because, yeah, MST3K, Conan O'Brien, and The Simpsons, I think that made me.
Simpsons for sure. Probably Mr. Show with Bob and David.
Yeah, that was a big one. Watch that all the time. That's another show my aunt, she didn't tape for me, but she, by that point I was in high school, so I wasn't like going over her house, but she told me, oh, you need to check out Mr. Show. You'd really like that. Yeah.
And I got into, again, we had, HBO and Showtime for a really long time growing up, which was helpful because mm-hmm. it kind of opens you up to some more stuff that you probably figure from streaming services mostly now. But
yep.
I got really into particularly George Carlin very early on in my life.
Explains your rosy outlook.
Yeah. I'm a very positive guy.
I used to watch Comedy Central nonstop. Pretty much. My mom and I used to watch like the stand-up comics because that's all Comedy Central was for the first few years, was just old HBO specials of stand-up comics, old SNL episodes without the music in it, and MST3K, and I don't know, like they had some show with Mark Maron called Short Attention Span Theater. Yeah, but I used to watch stand-up comics all the time, like just constantly on Comedy Central back in the day. Do they still do stand-up comedy at Comedy Central? I've just like sat down and watched it.
I think the closest thing they come anymore is like they'll do the roasts.
Ugh. That ruined it. It's always something that ruins a channel, and I feel like roasts, not that they're necessarily bad in and of themselves, but they just went too nuts with it. Like, hey, what if it was celebrities doing comedy? Yeah, I'd rather see professionals doing it. Can we get that? No. The professionals write their jokes for them. And then you're going to have Courtney Love up there just telling jokes like she's a comedian because Jeffrey Ross wrote her a bunch of jokes. Yeah, I'd rather just see
turns
him.
Turns out her delivery not great.
Yeah, right.
No, but I think I have, and probably still around somewhere, I have, I'm almost certain, like, we were on vacation and went to some place that had, you know, probably an outlet mall that had books. Mm-hmm. And I have a hardcover copy of Brain Droppings, which I think was the first George Carlin book.
That's literally him just, he would write his entire stand-up routine out, and then he put it into a book, which seems like, no pun intended, because it's called Brain Droppings, but what a no-brainer that was. Like, hey, George, you already write the shit out. How about we just publish that? Okay. I like to make extra money.
And there was some odds and ends, some like short stuff that probably wouldn't
fit. God, what a genius that guy.
There are definite, like, that guy a was place to put your stuff, I think, is in there.
Yeah. Yeah, some of the best bits. It just such a genius with language, too. Like, just nobody compares to him as far as wordplay. And I mean, I don't know. What I got from George Carlin more than anything was the ability to take a minor thing and blow it into a giant thing. Like, just take like one little thing and be like, that's what's wrong with America. That guy not using his turn indicator. And I'll tell you why for the next 20 minutes.
It all started because that prick wouldn't signal when he changed lanes.
Oh, because that kid is back on that escalator. James.
Yes.
What's your second fact?
Have you ever heard of cavitation?
Cavitation?
Cavitation.
Cavitation. I'm assuming that's something I would have heard if I go to the dentist, but I don't go to the dentist.
So it's more or less the effect that bubbles have on things underwater.
Ah. Ooh.
So cavitation bubbles are created when something significantly disturbs water.
Yeah.
Bubbles are generally short-lived and collapse on themselves almost immediately. In that process, though, they release tremendous amounts of energy, including shockwaves, potentially light, and temperatures up to 15,000 degrees Kelvin, which is roughly twice the temperature of the surface of the sun.
Wow.
These are very regularly caused by and very detrimental to boat propellers. So apparently,
wait a minute. I'm sorry if I'm cutting you off. I'm just always excited when I know something about what you're talking about. Isn't this that the shrimp can do this?
There is a pistol shrimp.
The pistol shrimp.
Which I'm going to talk to you about in just.
Okay. All right. The pistol shrimp. Yeah, that's awesome. Here. Okay, good.
So boat propellers, they generally make out of the hardest things that we know how to make because it's so damaging. Mm. Like these bubbles that they create that are very, very brief, but
they're
because
really
of the nature of water.
Yeah.
So you have boat propellers that cause this, but there's a little fella called the pistol shrimp, which has one big claw. I don't know if it has a little claw as well, but it certainly has one big claw.
Mm-hmm.
It can close that claw with so much force that it creates a cavitation bubble. And when it collapses, it creates a sound loud enough underwater that it can kill a nearby fish.
Yeah. I saw a thing on these shrimp like years and years ago on like the Discovery Channel when they used to actually do nature things. And yeah, it's the pistol shrimp, and it like just kind of closes its little claw and you can't see it in real time, but like they had an ultra slow-mo on it and it was like, and it is like this hot collapsing star in its little hand. It's amazing. And it can kill nearby fish. So is it a defense thing or is it a hunting thing?
It's a hunting thing.
Hunting?
Probably both, but yeah, I mean, it's, you know.
I forgot, does it make a sound too?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can hear it. Yeah, yeah.
That's underwater.
Fascinating. Underwater. It's amazing. I love that. So my third and final fact is this. Why does turning it off and on again work? you know, if you've watched the IT Crowd, you know, Roy, that he worked on the IT Crowd, his whole thing was if you call, he would just go, IT, have you tried turning it off and on again? And honestly, that's a joke because it's true. So many times, if you've had a problem with your computer, IT will ask you, well, did you turn it off and on again? I've dealt with engineers in radio so many times who will walk into a room, press a button, wait 10 seconds, press it again, look at the screen, and then wave goodbye. Well, I guess something needed to be reset. Why does that work? Well, we'll get into that in a second. But one of the best known cases of turning it off and on again working happened on the Apollo 9 mission, which was the first moon landing. Mission control informed Michael Collins, who was kind of in charge of the orbital part of it. Like, he was going around in a circle. He didn't. What a shaft that guy got. Like, he had to just lay there while the other guys got to go to the moon. And he's just like, well, I went to space. Dude, everybody's been to space. Nothing. He was told that there was a problem with the coolant on board. And if it became too cold, parts of the spacecraft would freeze. So they told him to assume manual control and implement environmental control system malfunction procedure 17. And he went, oh, okay. And then looked at it, flipped it off, flipped it on again, tapped the little thing, went, it's working again. And mission control was like, okay, that worked. He never told them that he just turned it off and on again. And then he just went about his business and everything was fine. He apparently, side note, he apparently spent a lot of time when he was orbiting napping. Which I find amazing. Like, there's nothing else to do while the other guys were down there on the moon. So he was just
yakking in there, bothering him.
Yeah. Could you possibly nap in that situation? I wouldn't be able to nap. That's probably why I couldn't be an astronaut, though. And, you know, most of these guys were former military, and that's something they actually do teach you in the military, is how to just go to sleep anywhere. Like, there's a system and a process of doing it where you have to like relax every part of your body, and then eventually you can drift off. But it proves me, one, just how great astronauts are, but two, I could never be an astronaut because of my trust issues, where I would be like, oh, you want me to do that, do you? Now let me ask you this: if I die, how will that affect you? Will it just make you look bad? Will you even lose your job? Nah. So I'm gonna do what I want to do, what I think is the right thing to do. And I would have done this in Michael Collins's case. I would have done the exact same thing, but I would have immediately destroyed the mission in a million other ways beforehand, because I just wouldn't listen to mission control. Be like, you don't have my best interest at heart, and why should I care what you say? You know, you said blast off in 3, 2, 1, and then we waited an extra 3 seconds before anything happened. There's that. The other thing it proves to me is also why you need humans for things like this, because a robot or a computer, if you just told it to do this thing, would just do it, and then it wouldn't fix anything, because apparently the procedure they're telling him to do wouldn't have fixed it, or at least wouldn't have been as quickly fixed as what he did. So a robot or a computer would just be like, uh-oh, that didn't fix, and then the error message would still be up on the screen. You wouldn't be able to get it off. So you need human beings to be like, I don't fucking care. Let's just see if this works. That worked. Okay, cool. That's what we're doing. Now, the reason why turning things on and off again seems to work is pretty simple, especially when it comes to computers. It's just this. When you have a computer that's running, it's basically just reading and interpreting language. That's all computer script and code and all that is. It's just language. And sometimes you can give it orders that'll conflict with each other and confuse the little computer. It's kind of like when you'd be helping your dad on the car and he'd tell you to shine the light in two places at once. You'd be like, wait, I only have one flashlight. No, I need it up there, not down there. No, over there, not there. It's kind of like that. It would get confusing. And, you know, your dad would reset you by telling you to go inside and stop bothering him. It's the same thing.
Or to do the hard reboot.
Yeah, so you do the hard reboot upside your head. So you would you shut down the computer, and that just kind of quiets everything down, quiets the chatter in its little head, and then you fire back up, and it's like, oh, what were we doing again? Okay, that's good. So that's why turning stuff on and off again works. I'm not really sure why it worked in this case, because I don't know that they were dealing with computer and code and language and everything like that. I think sometimes it works on mechanical things, but not as often, because we all like to believe that. Like, we have a car, it's making a funny noise. I'll just turn it off, and when I restart it, it'll go away. No. We had a refrigerator downstairs. The compressor was blowing on it, and it was the loudest thing on earth. It was so loud, we had to turn it off when I was recording up here, because that's how loud it was. It was actually shaking the floor. It was bad. And I honestly, my first idea was pull the refrigerator out, unplug it, wait 30 seconds, then plug it back in. It didn't fix anything.
If turning it off and on again doesn't work, you know what people can do?
What?
They can take Cody Akins.
Hey, look at you getting that product push in. Yeah, that's right. Cody does a little bit more than just turning things on and off again. If you get
that's
to that
probably
point,
the first thing he does, though.
If you ask him, it probably is. Look, and he'll tell you that his secret power is his ability to Google things better than you can, because that's where 99.9% of the answers for anybody dealing with computer issues is. But the difference is, you might find the solution on Google. You won't know what the hell it means. He does. He's able to find it. He knows what it means. And also, he does a deal right now for $15 a month. If you have a business, you're worried about losing all your data, or you're just a personal person, just an individual, a human being even, just worried about losing all your data, for $15 a month, you can get all that backed up with Cody. Don't have to worry about losing a damn thing. So make my computer guy your computer guy. Go to Cody Akins at AkinsPCRepair.com. All right, James, what's your third and final fact?
My third and final factual fact that's really, truly true. There is a city in Manitoba, up Canada way, mm-hmm. called Churchill. Probably because there's church on a hill, or there was this guy named Winston who did some stuff, whatever.
Winston.
And they have a facility in Churchill, Manitoba, for troublesome polar bears.
That's the cutest thing ever. I need to look at that right now.
It's an old military morgue that they repurposed. They established it in 1982. After a person was mauled by a polar bear on the streets. Now, prior to this, they would just kill the polar bears.
Oh.
If you were a problematic polar bear, they just put you down.
Oh.
But then they're like, you know what we can do? You know what we can do? We can try and rehabilitate them.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably not so much rehabilitation. They take them, they tranquilize them, they take them to this facility. They've got like 20 cells or 20 rooms for polar bears. And they kind of, they put them in timeout. They tranquilize them and they drop them off somewhere in the wild again. But 20 cells can hold 16 single bears and 4 family groups. You know, if you got a family of troublemakers.
Mm-hmm.
So they got a couple big rooms and more like small ones for individuals. So if the bear has been captured repeatedly, they'll extend. So they usually keep them for like 30 days. And they don't feed them.
So that's awful.
It's not that bad because it's kind of their natural cycle. Like they eat and then
Yeah.
Their concern is that if you have a person that feeds them, then they'd be more inclined to like approach humans and expect food. And if they don't get food, make the human food.
I just read an interesting fact about them about this place that says that the doors, if you drive a car, it is illegal to lock your doors because you need to get right back inside if a polar bear is coming at you.
Don't. Yeah,
bad idea. Anyway,
not the time to be fumbling with keys.
No. I got, you know what? I have a Tesla, and it opens, it unlocks with my phone. And I got to tell you, the key fob thing I used to have for the Nissans, that worked better. That worked better than my phone in the car. Like, it always takes an extra 3 seconds, and it's the longest 3 seconds of my life.
What if your phone dies?
There's a card in my wallet. You can use to unlock the car to you. Yeah.
Boy, Elon thinks of everything, doesn't he?
No, he didn't think of anything. He just takes credit for it. You can see how well he runs a business when he's left to actually run it, because he does not run Tesla. He is the biggest investor, and he takes all the credit for it. But you can see how well a business is run based on what's going on with Twitter right now. My God. Like, what's funny about the whole Twitter thing to me is, as Twitter isn't real. Twitter isn't real life. No social media is, but especially Twitter. I'm going to miss Twitter if it goes away because of all of this crap with Elon Musk not being able to run it right. I personally use it quite a lot. And at the same time, I have the worst imprint as far as followers and attention is concerned on Twitter. Like, if I put up, you know, cute picture, my family or myself, or just some random thought or whatever on Facebook, it'll always get over 100 likes or so. I'm not bragging, but that's, I've cultivated a good follow. You guys are awesome. So it'll always get hundreds of likes. I put something up on Twitter and it's like 2-3 likes, maybe at best.
I was super proud of myself. Like, I woke up early the other day. I'm like, Elon Musk is terrible at this. I'm like, that's a fucking clown. He's an evil clown.
Mm.
I'm like, Tim Curry. Didn't Tim Curry play the devil too? And I was like, so I tweet, Elon Musk reminded me a lot of Tim Curry lately. He seems to enjoy playing an evil clown or the devil. Yeah. And or the devil. Yeah. And I was like, that's pretty funny. Nothing.
No, that's my experience too. Nothing. And look, I'm not saying like I should be revered and worshipped as some kind of genius, but I know the shit I'm saying is just as good, if not better, than what a lot of other people are saying, or what James just said is a good line too. Nothing. There's just no gaming of it. It drives me nuts. It really.
So I screenshotted it, put it on Facebook, got reactions.
Did you? Yeah. Well, there you go. That's the way to do it. I don't know. I think it's just an algorithmic thing. I need to turn. Maybe this is good. Maybe to come full circle, Elon Musk taking over Twitter, we'll turn it off and then turn it back on again, because it was kind of broken. All right, we done?
Are you done?
I guess so. Bye!
Take this, bitch.